athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
I think very deeply.
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
I think very deeply.
Once again, thank you for joining me on this edition of Box to Row. And as a matter of fact, we're going to talk some Olympics today here on the program. Also, Howard head men's basketball coach Kenny Blakeney has an idea that I think you're going to want to hear with respect to the Howard Bison men's basketball program. Going to talk more about that a little bit later on in the show. So I'm back yet again from another trip. And these days, look, the season, we're about less than 3 weeks now away from the beginning of the college football season. So it's a really, really busy time. Add to that a couple of trips. Still got another trip to, matter of fact, take next weekend. But look, I was at NABJ last weekend. And no, I wasn't there for the fireworks on last Wednesday. But had an absolutely fantastic time. NABJ, which stands for National Association of Black Journalists, which I am a member of, has its annual convention in various cities each year. As a matter of fact, I hadn't been to an NABJ convention since either 98 or 99 when it was in Washington, D.C. I think it was 98. I was a student at Morgan State. I hadn't been to a convention then. And of course, it was just easy to get there because I was living in Washington. So, but it was absolutely fantastic. Had a great time, met some new people, saw some people that I hadn't seen in a bunch of years. It was just absolutely fantastic. And what happens at these conventions, it's an opportunity for networking. There's also an opportunity for panel discussions. So they'll have some panel discussions there as well. And you can take part of that. It's like 4 or 5 days. I was only there for a couple of days, but it's like 4 or 5 days of just excellence. And there are opportunities for job interviews, those that are there seeking jobs. There are a lot of opportunities for young people, especially college students, which when I was more involved with NABJ, it was when I was a college student, and just opportunities to interview with companies and to get to know companies a little bit better, yet allow those companies to get to know students a little bit better. I had a couple of opportunities, some connections that I made while I was there as well. It just was a fantastic time. By the way, I had never been to Chicago before. Now, I've been all over the place, traveled all over. I mean, this program, as a matter of fact, we're coming up on beginning to celebrate our 20th year on the air. And so we've got some big plans for that. As a matter of fact, but in those 20 years and then my previous time in athletic administration and just kind of growing up, I mean, I've been to a lot of different places, but and maybe I've been to the airport in Chicago in terms of a layover for another flight, but I've never or had never previously had the chance to visit or to spend time in Chicago. As a matter of fact, the festivities with respect to NABJ took place right on Michigan Avenue. I think the hotel I stayed at was maybe two or three blocks from the hotel where all of the activities took place. And so I had a chance, you know, there was some free time, or you make some free time. Like, there's always something going on. There was even an HBCU party on one of the nights where if you're an HBCU, you were, come on to the party. They actually had it in a relatively small room. It was so packed in there, I couldn't even go all the way in, but it was just great. But anyway, during some of the free time, so, you know, if you've listened to this show, excuse me, I collect records, collect a lot of records, got a big collection of all kinds of genres of music from, you know, country. For instance, we have Dolly Parton's very first record, and I don't believe in any reissues. So we don't buy any reissues. I don't buy records that came out in 1972 and then they reissued it in 2019. Nah, I don't do that. But, you know, I've got Guns N' Roses' first album, band album, hip-hop galore, the older stuff, right? And so I wanted to go to this record store, and I was told where I was going that it may not be the greatest part of town, shall we say. So you may want to Uber there. So that's what I did. I decided to Uber because I'm all about the public transportation, right? So I'm looking on Google Maps and figuring out how to get to a place. And matter of fact, to get to this record store, you could take a train, but you'd have to walk like 8 blocks to the train, or from the train station to the record store. So I was like, all right, I'm going to heed that advice and I'm going to take an Uber. So I did that. Spent, I don't know, maybe an hour in the record store. It didn't come out with anything. So I left and I'm like, okay, yeah, you know, come outside. You know, you're getting a feel of the neighborhood and so forth and the vibe that's kind of going on. So I shouldn't say Uber, rideshare. So I decided to go rideshare again, but couldn't find a rideshare to connect with. So I said, you know what? I'm probably not going to walk the 8 blocks to get to the train station to catch the train. So let me see what bus I can catch, where the nearest bus is, and try to see if I can catch the bus. So I did. I forget what street that the record store was on, but the bus stop was on Jackson Avenue. And this is the west side of Chicago on Jackson Avenue. So I walked the 2 or 3 blocks to the bus stop. It was bus number 126. Took it all the way downtown, almost right in front of my hotel room. And it was fine. Like, it was great. And being from the DMV, you know, catching the metro, the train, the bus, etc., is a way of life. So growing up in that sort of environment, I mean, to catch the bus is nothing, right? The next day, I said, okay, I'm going to go, I was going to another record store. This one was on maybe more the north side of Chicago. So went there. I actually caught the bus. It was bus 22. As a matter of fact, and I promise you, right? Like, there must have been, this was like a 50-minute ride between where I got on near downtown. I still probably had to walk 3 blocks to get to the bus to where I was going. The name of the avenue is escaping me where I was going. But anyway, where I was going, 50-minute ride, I promise you, between people getting on and off and all of that, the bus must have stopped at every single stop along the way. It must have been 150 people on that bus between those that got on, got off, whatever. So I ended up, getting off, going to the record store. As a matter of fact, while I'm talking, I'm going to try to pull up that the name of the street. So I was there, went to the record store, did my thing, had a good time. And so I ended up leaving there. But before I left, I asked the guy, I said, what's the best hot dog place? Like, I wanted to try a Chicago hot dog. So he says, oh, right up the street. It's like it's within walking distance, called Clark Street Dog. As a matter of fact, that was the street, Clark Street, and that was the street that the record store was on. So went to Clark Street Dog. Hot dog was fine. I mean, matter of fact, got two. But the whole time while I was walking and being in that part of town, I saw all of these people with Chicago Cubs jerseys on. So I'm thinking, you know, Wrigley Field cannot be terribly far from here, okay? And so I asked the guy at Clark Street Dog. He says, oh, yeah, it's like a 15-minute walk. So sure enough, put it in the little Google, looked at the walk, about 20 minutes. I was there. It was great. Had a chance to take a picture. I mean, in front of the Wrigley Field sign. So just a blast, and caught the train back home, the red line, back to downtown Chicago. So Chicago, I will be back. Love the city. As a matter of fact, where we stayed at, it was crazy because Grant Park was right across the street, again, on Michigan Avenue. La Palooza was going on at the same time as NABJ. So that was crazy. And, you know, didn't have a chance, obviously, to go to La Palooza, but had a great time at NABJ, had a great time in Chicago. And I look forward to my return to Chicago. So that's just another trip, you know, just super duper busy as the football season's going to kick off in a couple of weeks. And we've got you covered here on Box to Row when it comes to college football talk and to HBCU football talk. But like I mentioned on today's program, we're going to talk some Olympics on the program. We're going to talk some Howard men's basketball. We normally around this time are not talking a lot about college basketball. However, there's a big thing going on with respect to Howard men's basketball in particular. Kenny Blakeney, the head coach, an idea that he has that I want to talk about in depth a little bit later on in the program. So sit back, relax, and enjoy as Box to Row rolls on.
Yep, yep. What's up, y'all? You know who it is. Deep Block General, top five that are alive. Your boy, J.D. Kiss.
Like it is in New York. Why they forcing you to be hard? Why ain't you a thug by choice? Why the whole world love my voice? Why I try to tell them that it's the flow, son?
And right now you're listening to From the Press Block to Press Row with my big brother, Donald Ware, right here. Your boy, J.D. Kiss.
The Greater Raleigh Sports Alliance is proud to support the 7th annual Box to Row Countdown to Kickoff, and we are excited to welcome head coaches from area colleges and universities to the capital city. We look forward to another fantastic season of HBCU football filled with great games, rivalries, pageantry, and unforgettable fall Saturdays. The Greater Raleigh Sports Alliance works with local partners to grow the sporting event industry in our area. The GRSA has an extensive track record of securing and hosting successful tournaments and championships, resulting in significant economic impact for the region and an enhanced quality of life for our residents. In 2022, Raleigh was named Sports Travel Best Host City. To learn more, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at RaleighNCSports. Best of luck to all area HBCU football programs this season.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
Box to Box Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Box to Row.
Gonna come here on Box to Row. Howard head men's basketball coach Kenny Blakeney has an idea of how the Howard men's basketball
way you'll never make it. Come with the week. I break it, step into my zone, mad rhymes will stifle. Lines like rifles go blast when I kick.
Let's talk some Olympics. I want to talk some National Football League also. And congratulations to Simone Biles, perhaps the greatest gymnast, certainly the greatest American gymnast. I don't think there's any question about that. She won 3 gold and a silver this year at the Olympic Games. And, you know, she had a bit of a slip up on the beam. But look, I mean, nobody's perfect. I mean, she was absolutely, we expect her to be perfect all the time. I think that's sort of the expectation, and that's not how things work. I mean, look back to the Olympics going back some 3 years ago now, and to even get to this point, who would have thought she would have even come back for a number of different reasons? One, because she didn't perform as well in 2021. Two, she's an older gymnast, and it gets to a point when you're an older gymnast that there's a lifespan for gymnasts. But to come back and to win 4 medals in the Olympics, I think now she has like, what, 11 or something like that all time. She is absolutely spectacular. And certainly when you think about it, the greatest American gymnast. Now, I don't know. We always talk about, well, who's the greatest? And I think I even said this last week. She may be the greatest. She's the greatest gymnast of all time. Well, maybe. I mean, you know, how do you make that comparison? Is it just Olympic Games? Is it World Games? Is it a combination of the two? Because those World Games are really, really big as well. That's how we on this program, meaning Box to Row, met Simone Biles after her phenomenal showing at the 2014 World Games. And shortly thereafter, she came on this program as a guest. And this was long before what we know Simone Biles to be now. And so how do you measure that? But I mean, you talk about and that's just Olympic medals, right? Like world championships. She's been absolutely spectacular as well. And so congratulations to Simone Biles on what she was able to accomplish at this year's Olympics. Also, big congratulations goes out to Gabby Thomas. Now, Gabby Thomas, and what I didn't realize is that Gabby Thomas is a graduate of Harvard University. Okay, so I think I may have heard that she's the first maybe Harvard or graduate to win a gold medal. She won it in the 200 meter. You go back to the games in Tokyo going back now 3 years ago. She was part of that 4x100 meter relay team that got silver and then got the bronze medal in this same event, the 200 meter, going back some 3 years ago. But what she was able to do, absolutely spectacular. And look, the United States is dominating in overall medals and certainly leads when it comes to gold medals. And so, you know, watching these Olympics and watching some of the stories has been absolutely tremendous for this 2024 Olympics taking place in Paris. So let me switch gears. I want to talk a little National Football League. The big news is about Brandon Ayuk, the wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers have told him to go get a trade. He's scheduled to make a little bit more than $14 million a year this year. It's all, you know, that all $14 million goes against the cap. Now, I'm not 100% sure of what Ayuk is looking for. Like, you know, the range of the top receivers now is somewhere between 28 to $32 million. That is a position that really went up astronomically over the last 3 years or so. Like, it's a situation where the quarterback position is king. You know, that left tackle position is a really big position. You know, on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, you know, pass rushers, those edge rushers get paid. And then you've got the wide receivers. Well, that wide receiver number has now jumped up to number 2, whereas the running back's number keeps going down. Like, you've got to be an absolutely exceptional, a Hall of Fame worthy type of running back to get the dollars that maybe you're due and once upon a time that the running backs did get. Well, you know, I look at Brandon Ayuk and I think what you really have to look at more so is the trajectory of his career. In other words, do I think Brandon Ayuk is a $28 to $32 million receiver right now? He's completed 4 years in the league. The answer to that question for me is no. Now, he had an absolutely breakout season last year, very much an integral part of this San Francisco team. I mean, you look at Debo Samuel. I think he was, if I'm not mistaken, and Debo held out last year also. But, I mean, he's the kind of guy that can do much more. You can line him up, meaning Debo Samuel in the backfield. He's going to go over, make catches, tough runs after catch, all of those kind of good things. Whereas Brandon Ayuk, strictly a receiver, but licks, and again, you guys know, and I say it all the time, when you're talking about the National Football League or when I'm talking about pro sports, and in particular at its highest level, you know, the numbers don't mean anything a lot to me anyway. But of course, when you're talking about contracts and you're talking about a team that is winning, no, San Francisco did not win the Super Bowl last year, but it played in the Super Bowl. It is a contending team. Listen to these numbers. Played and started in all 16 games, 75 receptions, 1,342 yards, and 7 touchdowns. As I mentioned, he doesn't run. They don't even use him in gadget situations. He had 0 carries. But the big number, 17.9 yards per reception. Now, you don't really get those kinds of numbers in terms of, in particular, that 17.9 yards per reception when you're talking about the National Football League. Now, a lot of times in big play in college, you'll hear about those kinds of numbers and guys averaging 20 yards and in excess of 20 yards per reception and 18 yards. I think a good amount of yards per reception when you're talking about the National Football League is somewhere, if you're talking about good, probably somewhere right around, I don't know, 13 or 14 yards. Anything, you know, beyond that is pretty good. And we're talking about almost 18 yards per reception for Brandon Ayuk. Okay, his trajectory is really good. Let's go back to 2022. 78 receptions, 1,015 yards, 8 touchdowns, 13 yards per reception. So he's jumped up almost 5 yards per reception. And so he's more of a go-to guy if you look at it, right? He's really your deep threat. He's more of your deep threat. Okay. That said, I don't think he's worth the 20. He's not in that category. You talk about elite receivers. Is he an elite receiver? I think there are, how do you quantify elite? Maybe, you know, if you're talking about the 5 to 6 best receivers, maybe that's the elite category. I don't think Brandon Ayuk is in that category to command that kind of money. But I certainly do think he's worth more than the $14 million that he's due from San Francisco. Generally, I'm a guy, if you sign a contract, you play out the contract. The issue in the National Football League is that contracts are not guaranteed. The signing bonus money, there are guarantees, but the entirety of a contract is not guaranteed. That's why when you look at, I would say, the last 10 years or so, you'll look at these contracts and then the contracts will say, well, so much money was guaranteed. Of course, you have a signing bonus and then so much of those dollars are guaranteed and teams can cut you at any time. So it's not like the NBA or not like Major League Baseball where the contracts, where you have these astronomical contracts. I would say in particular, Major League Baseball, and all of that money is guaranteed. Of course, there's, and you can understand why I think to some degree with the National Football League, because there's much more risk in terms of injury than in the NBA and certainly in Major League Baseball. But I think he definitely deserves more than the $14 million that he's due. He has, I think, outplayed that contract. In essence, San Francisco told him to go seek a trade. Now, that doesn't mean what San Francisco is doing is saying, okay, let's see what the market says your value is, or the market says your worth is. Then maybe we come back. And I don't know, maybe, you know, if he get, and by the way, San Francisco has to okay the deal. So I think Ayuk wins out if he can get a deal. Now, there had been talk about the Steelers were in the running. That is kind of cooled off. The Patriots were in the running. That's not going to happen. Maybe there are some other teams that could use the services of an Ayuk, but I think it depends upon the money that he's trying to command. He's still young. This is only his fifth year in the league. Worth more than the $14 million, no doubt, but not the elite level money that the elite receivers are getting. Now, his trajectory may indicate that, and that's sort of, I think, what not only San Francisco has to weigh out, but other teams have to weigh out as well. Do you pay a guy, and in particular, a wide receiver based upon his trajectory? Okay, and we'll see. We'll see how things really play out for Brandon Ayuk. But, I mean, I definitely don't think that Ayuk is an elite receiver. Look, up next here on Box to Row, been teasing this conversation the whole time. Want to talk about the idea that Howard Hedman's basketball coach, Kenny Blakeney, has to make money for the Bison program.
You're listening to From the Press Box to Press Row.
Here with Stephen Curry, your progress from Davidson to now with Golden State.
Where I've come from in high school into a small D1 college at Davidson. And it's a great story, and I'm just having fun, you know, living my dream and riding the ride.
Main event! Jey Uso joining us here. Could there be a possible return to the bloodline?
For me?
Yes. At some point.
I'm gone, D. Hey, I threw the deuces up before. I'll do it again, man.
Come on, main event. That's family, man. I mean, I'm not talking about now. I get it. But down the line, like, come on.
Hey, D, you see how they be treating me, man? Come on, man. That something. It be your own family sometimes be doing you wrong, Lou. I gotta go, man. Hey, I'm doing all right by myself.
She's Simone Biles.
Actually really fun, like, to be honest. Had a lot of fun. We were like, oh, of course, like, we're in the best shape of our lives. We're feeling confident about our body, and we hope that other young girls and women, like, feel that being strong is so beautiful.
The one and only Michael Strahan, and cannot have you on without talking about Texas Southern. Cannot. So how did you ultimately end up at Texas Southern?
Yeah, from Houston. Grew up in Germany. When I was a senior in high school, my dad said, I'm going to send you to stay with your uncle in Houston and get a football scholarship. So I went to Houston. I played at Westbury High School for 1 year. Texas Southern was probably the only school that saw me play, being right there in Houston and being a local boy. And Coach Walter Highsmith, I went over to see him, and he offered me a scholarship. It was perfect for me, man, to go to the HBCU, to go to Texas Southern. The size of the school, the education they gave me, not just in the classroom, but about life. I would have been swallowed up at another school. I wouldn't have felt as if I really could have made a difference or had a real purpose of being there. But at Texas Southern, I always felt like I could make a difference and I had a purpose.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Skylar Diggins of the WNBA. Thank you for having me. I'm excited. You know, just been able to work a lot on my body and my shape, and a lot of things that I feel like I needed to work on in the offseason. I was able to get that done, and, you know, it's showing.
Snoop Dogg is on the mic. Pay attention.
I appreciate the love that I get, and I appreciate the sport of hip-hop. And it's giving me back that same love in return, you know, for the amount of years that I've been doing it. I've always went into it with the same, you know, spirit of I make music for the people. I make it go for them, and I always make them a part of it. And I never separated myself and tried to be a star. I've always wanted to be one of the people that you can look to as somebody that was, you know, like your uncle because of the way that I treat people. And I feel like my career is representative of that. That's why the longevity is there. That's why the love is there. And that's why I maintain the status of, you know, being relevant for so many years.
I'm talking about none other than Serena Williams.
That was definitely one of the better matches I've ever played. I've had it just like that. You know, I was really focused, just really, you know, excited.
Demetrius Flannery, a.k.a. Lil Meech.
He sent in Atlanta, told me that he was going to move me from my hometown, Miami, to L.A., put me in acting classes, and I had to go 5 days a week, two times a day. Only had about a year and a half, but once I started, I didn't want to stop, you know, so once in a lifetime opportunity, I didn't want to watch somebody else, you know, get the role of playing my father and me having to watch him on TV. Opportunity passed me by, so I just buckled down and just focused, man. Put everything to the side, made sure that my number one thing that I wanted to do was focus on being the best possible actor I can be for the show. And that's how it happened, man.
That is the voice of Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm just, you know, trying to get better every single day. We've been through a lot as a team, and I enjoy playing with a great group of guys. So, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy every moment of it.
That is the voice of Common. You went to Florida A&M.
Oh, FAMU days were some of the best days of my life. I mean, I had so much fun there. It was like invigorating. It was an introduction to a new aspect of culture in the world. I mean, the Southern girls was just incredible. you know, the food was great. The black college experience, you can't beat that.
Kyrie Irving.
Playing at Duke for Coach K. What was that like and how that prepared you for the league now?
Playing 11 games, you know, a lot of people think that's not a big package for you to become a better player. But for me, it was. Playing for Coach K, he gave me the keys to the car, and I was driving it in first 8 games, and, you know, being a part of something special like that and having a brotherhood built at an institution such as that one is an experience that you never forget.
Ice Cube has been our guest.
Hey, man, thanks for letting me talk a little music, movies, and sports. Hey, my favorite three topics.
Hey, y'all, it is the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best on Box to Row. Tune in if you want to catch the best BEST interview ever.
From the Press Box to Press Row is the sports talk show that is the voice and the talk of HBCU sports, with a flair for pro sports talk and entertainment. Check the show out online at BoxToRow.com.
That's Box to Row, real, relevant radio. Wherever and however you may be listening to Box to Row, whether it's on terrestrial radio, on satellite radio, on Sirius XM, whether you're listening online or streaming Box to Row, thank you for making the program a part of your day. Look, I want to talk now about what I would consider a radical proposal by Howard Hedman's basketball coach, Howard Blakeney. And let's define the term radical for these purposes. Now, you know, we're in, when you think of maybe the word radical, you think of politics. I'm not talking about radical in terms of from a political standpoint, but radical in terms of thinking outside of the box, a wow kind of proposal is how I'm using the word radical. So this is, let me try to break it. There's a lot of components to this, and I'm going to try to do this in this segment. This is something that could be talked about for a while, but let me try to break it down in terms of Coach Blakeney's plan. What he wants is he wants to receive into just the basketball program a 33% investment from investors. Now, he met with a private equity firm, and this was reported. This was a big article that was in the Washington Post, and this is what the Washington Post stated, that Blakeney met with a private equity firm, okay? What he's proposing is a three-way revenue split between Howard University, the investor, and the men's basketball program. So the part of this is because he wants to upgrade Howard's Bird Gymnasium, and I'll have more thoughts about that as well. $4 to $5 million to pay scholarship players NIL money, perhaps move Howard, the basketball program, out of the MEAC, maybe go independent a la what Notre Dame has with a football program. Now, of course, if you did something like that, you'd have to have a TV deal. And that, again, we'll break this down a little bit further. But he needs the $100 million initial investment to upgrade Burr and the roster. So for this to even take place, he would need an initial investment of $100 million. There's a lot of moving parts to this. Like, I'm not mad at this particular proposal. Like, it's interesting to me. Do I think it's something that would work? No. And I'll lay out the reasons why I don't think it will. But I think where we are in college athletics, you have to think along these lines. You have to think about how, especially, and again, NIL and the transfer portal are linked in so many ways. So you're losing kids. Yes, you can go and get kids, but what if there's a kid that you groomed for like 3 years, he enters the transfer portal? Do you think that you're going to immediately replace that kid that knows your program, knows what you want, is involved with the program from a culture standpoint, and replace him with someone immediately to come out of the transfer portal, even if you feel like that may be an upgrade? It doesn't work that way. You know, so I like the thought process in terms of, okay, I got to pay if I'm Coach Blakeney, I got to pay my kids. Like, I got to pay them to continue to stay committed to the program. Now, where I think Howard has an advantage over not just HBCUs and Division I HBCUs in particular, but even some of the smaller schools, is that it's Howard University. Like, you can say what you want. When you talk about HBCUs, okay, as a whole, the number one most talked about HBCU that's going to come to the top of mind to people is Howard University. You can be, you know, those that are HBCU, you can be mad if you want. That's just what it is, right? So maybe there's that dynamic when you come to a Howard that you're going to get a top-notch education. Not just that. I mean, look, the reputation is going to be big time when you go out to get a job, because as we know, most of these student athletes will not play professional sports. Okay, so I think Howard has the advantage there. But this is, you know, this is why I think that there are a lot of cons, really, to this. I'll start with the cons, and then I will look at some of the pros, and then give my overall thoughts. So this is a Coach Blakeney idea, right? So he would have to have a long-term commitment to Howard University as its head men's basketball coach. That's first and foremost. And in this day and age, look, he's won two straight MEAC titles. He's a hot commodity. He's a Duke graduate. Okay. He's got some connect. It took him a long time to get to this point. So maybe some of those Duke connections didn't pan out for him early, but at the end of the day, he's hot. He's probably on a lot of schools' radar, probably could get paid a lot more money from some schools that would be considered also mid-major programs. You know, I think the other part of that, though, is that Howard University, two things. One, he's from Washington, D.C., so it's very knows Howard University very well, even though he didn't go to Howard, knows Howard University very well. Two, Howard University is the university that gave him his first shot as a head coach. And he's come on, and I'd invite you, look, if you don't know how Kenny Blakeney's story, I'd invite you to visit the Box to Row YouTube channel, where we had a conversation with Kenny Blakeney. He talked about his story and being making very minimal amounts of money to be an assistant coach. Howard gave him his opportunity, and look what's happened since Howard's given him his opportunity. Howard has won two straight MEAC titles with him as the head coach. So there would have to be some kind of deal there where Kenny Blakeney's not going anywhere, because this plan's not going to work if Kenny Blakeney's not there. It wouldn't. I mean, I don't think it's going to work anyway, but I would say definitely wouldn't work if Kenny Blakeney is not the head men's basketball coach at Howard. Number two, and this is maybe more important, and this was, well, definitely more important, and this was also pointed out, this proposal hasn't been vetted through Howard University. Okay, listen, Howard University isn't into athletics that much. I mean, it just is what it is. You know, let's go back to, I think I can't remember if the year was 2011 or 2012 with the whole book scandal voucher when student athletes were using what the money that was given to them for books on other things. Now see how far we've come when student athletes really to survive in a lot of respects use their school, their book money voucher on other items, right? When that happened, Howard University shut down the athletics department. Why? Because the athletics department brand was damaging the university brand. Howard University disassociated itself from its own athletics brand. So it's not into athletics. Look, and at the end of the day, as I mentioned earlier, look at Howard University as a brand. And by the way, I would also note that Howard has close to $1 billion endowment. Last I looked, it was something around $850 million. No HBCU is close to that. And a lot of smaller schools aren't even close to that. And I think I'll get into it a little bit more as HBCUs relate to smaller schools, right? Howard alums and fans, right? Like the talk is about upgrading Burr. Well, I would ask, what are the upgrades? Is it an upgrade in terms of the number of seats? Because Burr holds 2,700 people. Is it an upgrade in terms of perhaps the fan experience? Perhaps the experience for families? Maybe you can't go to a Wizard. I'm not trying to compare the Wizards to Howard, but maybe you can't go to or can't afford to go to a Wizards game, but you can afford to go to a college game, so you decide to go to Howard because it's so fan-friendly. I think part of the issue with that is when I looked at the numbers in terms of attendance at Howard this past year, like the highest attendant game was the game versus Hampton, the Battle of the Real HU, which had 2,500 listed in attendance. The place holds 2,700, so it wasn't even sold out. B, you look at even the Morehouse game. Now, you can look at Morehouse as a Division II, whatever. That's a big game because you're talking about two of the most prestigious historically black colleges, yet that game only attracted less than 1,300. The other highest game was a home game versus Morgan, which attracted a little bit more than 2,000. And Baltimore and Morgan are not that far apart. So the attendance to me is not there anyway. And further to me speaks to there needs to be more support. I put it like that. There needs to be more support from Howard alums for something like this to work. Now, let me look at some of the pros here. Okay. Kenny Blakeney could take this proposal to another school. Okay, it is something he has laid out for Howard. I think in his mind, and I don't know, I hadn't talked to him. As a matter of fact, we'll have him on the show prior to the basketball season, talk with him about the program and also talk with him about this proposal. But I think he's committed to Howard University, again, from the perspective of being a local and or a native of D.C., and Howard gave him his first shot. But he could take this to another school. You know, now it would, the thing about that, however, is that I think another school would look at it the same way as Howard. And look, Howard, while being HBCUs are smaller schools in the bigger scheme of things, and smaller schools have limited resources as a whole, but that's something he could do. Maybe somebody looks at it that way. This, we're talking about it on Box to Row, this national platform, this national program, okay? And Washington Post is a world newspaper. ESPN talked about it. So you have entities that are talking about this. So guess what? It generates awareness for Howard University and the Howard basketball program. I think that's a pro as well. Look, Kenny Blakeney can make a radical, I think it is radical, and in a good way, proposal like this because he's hot. He's very, I've talked with him many times. He's very, very smart. Again, he's got a Duke education. you know, that means something. And, you know, he's won two straight MEAC championships, turned a program around. And again, this is a program, hadn't won a MEAC tournament up until the 21-20 or the 22-23 season since, you know, 30 years ago. So he can do this. He can talk about this. He can propose this. And look, I think Howard will have to address this. I mean, whether or not it says no or yes to this, I would think on the surface it would say no, or maybe they come up with some kind of compromise. Because I don't think Howard University is going to allow basically a 33% ownership in its basketball program. That's what this is. You want to talk about college athletics? It's no longer amateur in a lot of respects. This would be a 33% ownership stake in the Howard men's basketball program. Look, I'm up against the break. Hit me up via Twitter at BoxToRow. Look, I'm going to talk more about this on the other side. Keep it locked.
On last week's From the Press Box to Press Row with Donald Ware.
Kyle Whittingham, the head football coach at Utah, speak to some of the opportunities that the Big 12 offer to Utah.
Well, first of all, it's great to be in a conference. You know, when the Pac-12 dissolved, there was a lot of teams that weren't sure what their fate was going to be, and were elated to have landed in the Big 12.
So you were in favor of the college football playoff expansion?
100%, and I think it needs to go to 16 sooner rather than later. And I think when everyone sees how well-received it is and how exciting it is, I think we'll get to 16 in pretty short order.
From the Press Box to Press Row is one of the hottest sports talk shows in the country. Join Donald each week as he takes you on a journey through the world of HBCU sports and pro sports and interviews with top sports and entertainment figures. That's From the Press Box to Press Row each week on your favorite station.
It's Donald Ware from the Press Box to Press Row.
Welcome back to Box to Row, continuing our conversation in terms of Kenny Blakeney, the head men's basketball coach at Howard, and the proposal that he would like to put forth, where he would like to get whether it's a private equity firm or investors to invest a third or have a third stake or share a third of the revenue, I should say, in the men's basketball program. The other third would be, of course, Howard University and then the men's basketball program. But again, as I mentioned, I think on the other side, this is not just a revenue share. This is now you have a one-third investment or ownership. Okay, where college athletics is, the amateur part of college athletics is gone. It is minor league sports. It is minor league professional sports in a lot of respects. And so I'm just kind of giving my thoughts on this whole situation. You know, as I mentioned, I like what he's saying. Like, I think you're thinking really outside of the box, which we really need to do, because as he says, which is true, you're either part of the haves or you're part of the have-nots. I just think the issue is the support aspect. Would Howard alums? I don't think this is a proposal that's going to go through, but would Howard, and I think in reading the Washington Post article and some of the quotes that Coach Blakeney had, I don't know if he thinks it would go through either. Okay, but it is something he has put out there, and it is something we're talking about and others are talking about, right? Would have to be a lot more support. I talked about the attendance situation in terms of Howard. I mean, you're not even selling out Burr, so you're doing upgrades, but the place is not even being sold out for games. The other thing is, you know, even from an HBCU, and let's look at this from sort of a MEAC standpoint, those that may wonder, well, what if in fact Howard basketball, because again, we're only talking about basketball at this point. That's the proposal on the table. Didn't have anything to do with soccer, with football, with any of the other sports, strictly basketball. You know, what does that mean for the MEAC? Well, the MEAC would then, let's say this went through. Then you'd have seven schools in the MEAC that play basketball. I think that's enough still for an automatic bid to the men's and women's tournaments, which those are revenue generating. When you get that automatic bid, you automatically get a certain amount of money. And then the further you go along, the more money you get, then it's split with the conference as a whole. So I think the MEAC would still have its automatic bid. You know, and this just brings me to another point, a little bit off the topic, but just think if we as those that are HBCU grads, because in the bigger scheme of things, people really don't care about HBCU sports in the bigger scheme of things. I'm just trying to tell you, okay? Unfortunate as it may be, people generally in the general population just doesn't care. But it's not just HBCUs. We look at it from that vantage point because maybe we're a fan of an HBCU or our parent went to an HBCU or we're HBCU grads. It's a smaller school deal. People generally don't care about smaller school athletics. That's just how it is. And HBCUs fall under that. But what if we as HBCU people, I think we need to, look, there are so many different things that we can care about as HBCU people within the confines of our university. Maybe we don't care about athletics, but we care about the engineering program, so we give to the engineering program. Or maybe we care about athletics, and so, or excuse me, about scholarships for students, so we give money towards the scholarship program. Or perhaps we majored in communications at our respective university, so we give money to the communications program. What Coach Blakeney is also offering is the part of this, the $100 million investment that he needs, and he's not looking for it from the university. He's looking outside of the university because could Howard make the investment? Yeah, probably could. I mean, you know, at a 850, last I saw, $1 million endowment. I mean, that's a bit of a hit. So you're talking about 100 out of 800 million. So you're talking about maybe around a 12%. That would be 12% of the endowment. I mean, the university's not going to do that, but could it? I mean, I guess it could. But that's why he's looking to raise the $100 million outside of the university doing this. But think about this. What if everybody bought, what if you as an HBCU alum, I'm talking to HBCU alums specifically or those that are supporters of HBCUs. What if you went out and bought season tickets to your respective, from your respective school, in particular the revenue sports, and your revenue sports are football and then men's and women's basketball. Why don't you go out and buy, think about that. Now, if you, and that includes me, like, I support Morgan State University in a number of different ways and from a financial standpoint, and I've really gotten into that more so the last couple of years. But maybe I'm now going to go out and purchase season tickets purchase a football package or for men's and women's basketball package, right? That's revenue to the university. Now, obviously, I'm here in Raleigh. I call games on the weekends. The likelihood that I'm going to go to a lot of the games is very minute. However, I'll give those games. There's a way maybe to give those games away. And maybe universities can put together a program whereas you have season tickets, you're not going to use those season tickets, and you give those tickets to those games to schools or to people in the community that maybe never experienced a college game before. And that's why I would also say that from an HBCU standpoint, not only, you know, our product on the field is what it is, and it's a pretty good product, I think, football-wise and even basketball and even some of the other sports. It's a good product. But where we need to up our game as HBCUs is in terms of the fan experience, right? And I think maybe this is part of what the upgrades to Burr would be. You know, how are you entertaining the fans in between during media timeout, at halftime, you know, pregame, you know, what are you doing? And not just football. I think a lot of people, a lot of universities do stuff football-wise. Like A&T, for instance, A&T has this whole fan experience prior to football games. As a matter of fact, you don't even have, you can be part of the fan experience. I believe you can be part of the fan experience and not have to purchase a ticket. I have to go back and look. But I know that the tailgate situation, that was a lot was made about that many years ago, about the tailgate situation at A&T related to purchasing tickets. I think they're all linked. But anyway, the point is we need to do more if we're not already. You've got fan bases that are going to support their school no matter what. A&T is one of those schools. Jackson State is one of those schools. Southern University is one of those schools. And when I say support, I don't just mean football and I don't just mean men's basketball. I mean across the board. Okay. That's where we can also help to drive revenue, is supporting our schools by buying season tickets. But at the same time, what our schools have to do is drive up that fan experience. I think if you can do that, you know, you would have a better shot. And it's not just Howard, but, you know, you'd have a better shot at this. And again, going back to the Howard deal, I just feel like you want to make upgrades to Burr, which is great. Maybe more seating, but the seating that Burr already has. Now, maybe you're talking about in terms of the kinds of seats. Maybe you're talking about, okay, if you're a season ticket holders, you get, you know, one of those paddings and your seat is more distinctive than the regular seats. I think they're all pretty much all box seats, if I remember correctly, at Burr. But maybe if you're a season ticket holder, you get a special seat. And maybe that's part of it. But in terms of the numbers, Howard's got to drive its numbers up. From a basketball standpoint, I mean, if Morehouse is coming to town, you know, you got to have more than 1,400 people for that game. If Morgan's coming to town, that game's got to be sold out. If Hampton's coming to town, you need those extra 200 seats that you were missing that weren't sold to be sold, right? That's going to help to drive the revenue aspect and would help this proposal a lot more, because if you go to an investor says, okay, let me see what you got. And you're saying, well, we only had 550 people at the Regents game. Well, I understand it's Regents and it's more of an exhibition game, but man, you got to have more than 500 people at the game. Like, you want me to invest, but you only got 500 people at the game, right? And to the, and further, you know, with Howard University, I mean, look, there's no signage really to speak of at the football stadium, right? At the Burr gymnasium, right? Well, at least the core. I hadn't been to Howard in a while, but if I remember, even at the football Green Stadium, the field is beautiful, but in terms of the seats and all that, it's as big as when my father played at Howard back in the late 60s. Like, you got to do some upgrades. And that's what I'm talking about in terms of Howard University and the commitment to athletics. So those are some of the reasons that, while I really like this idea that Coach Blakeney has come up with to really generate revenue and awareness in particular for Howard men's basketball program, I think the university is going to shoot it down. Now, maybe there's some kind of compromise that they can talk about, but I think part of it starts with the fan base in terms of the support as well. So then you can get those NIL dollars. The fan base, you get a collective, and then the fan base contributes to that collective to give these players money, so they're not jumping into the transfer portal, and you can upgrade your roster, which is in part which Coach Blakeney wants to do. Your thoughts? Hit me up via Twitter at BoxToRow or at DWare1. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. For more information on BoxToRow, log on to our website, BoxToRow.com. Don't forget our 20 we're going to begin our 20-year celebration beginning on August 21st. We're going to have more information on our website and on our social media channels. And always remember to support those that support Yo Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.
I met this girl when I was 10 years old, and what I love most, she had so much soul. She was old school, but I was just a shorty, never knew.